My name is Marcel, and I am an alcoholic. And my home group is a cheerleading group in San Francisco, which is a big book study at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning. My sobriety date is December 18th, 1988. And I'm grateful to be sober and to be able to celebrate another day of life. And I'd like to welcome any newcomer and anyone in our sobriety, and I hope all my heart and being that you get to stay. Aloha. Welcome to the 50th International Women's Conference at Oahu, Hawaii. I want to thank the committee for asking me to participate. It's a great honor and a privilege. And let's thank these incredible women who have brought this wonderful conference to us. I also want to thank my gracious hostess, Chrissy, who's been an amazing treasure in my life. There's a lovely passage that I think of it when I think of Chrissy. Beauty has its own language, lost years and 1,000 voices, and the beauty in the heart and spirit deeds the words. Chrissy has a very loving heart and spirit. Chrissy came to San Francisco last year with her husband and her daughter, who was a child at the time, Stevie, and we went over to see this little baby, you know, the other day, and how wonderful this little baby has sober, loving grandparents. Mom, wasn't that an amazing show? You have some really fine men on this island. My heart rate still isn't normal. Martin Luther King said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. And hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Can you not feel the love in this room tonight? I was talking to a dear friend of mine in Massachusetts, Eleanor, and Eleanor was celebrating 30 years of sobriety. And Eleanor and I have a lot of history, a lot of history. When she lived in San Francisco, you know, I used to go to meetings drunk. And I was in a meeting in Mission, 1010 Valencia, which I know some of you ladies are familiar with, okay? And I had fallen off the chair, and I was kind of lying in a little heap on the floor. And Marilyn came in, and later on Marilyn told me, she said, "You know, I started to go up to you, but you're a little too far out there, even for me." And Marilyn has 30 years of sobriety now, and I am godmother to her son, Nicholas. But Eleanor came in, and Eleanor's a tough New Yorker, with that deep jazz voice with kind of a little gravel in it. And she got down in front of me. She knelt down and she said, "Lift up your head, dear. You can have dignity and grace as a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous." And she helped me off the floor, into the chair, and she welcomed me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of Eleanor's sons was the same age as my son. When he was 35, he had an aneurysm and he died. And I could be there for her like she was there for me. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We help one another. We don't judge and harm one another. I want to thank the amazing speakers we've had already. We've had Jeanette. We've had Sammy. And, of course, we've had Wilma. Yeah. Who brings us her wisdom, her dignity, and her grace. I'm also the product of an interracial marriage. My father came from the Philippines to study. My mother's French. She grew up in the South. She drove clear across the United States in a convertible, picking up hitchhikers along the way to take care of her aunt, who was dying of cancer in San Francisco. My mother would be 110, and my father would be 103. And they were both tough as granite, but they had gentle hearts. My father would go overseas to fight in World War II, and sometimes you'll hear the term that all Asians look alike, which is not true. When we came back from fighting overseas, we were mistaken for being Japanese, which was not healthy following the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So I learned a lot of very challenging survival skills when I was very young. That did not make me an alcoholic, but I do understand the dynamics of racial prejudice, and it is very cruel. I was walking home with my parents one night, and three men forced us into an alley, and they were going to harm us. And my father always carried a large knife, and he stood in front of us, and he got down in warrior position. He said, "Two of you will go down." And we were able to back out of that situation. That was one of many situations. My sponsor told me when I got sober, she said, "I think you made the decision when you were very, very young that no one's going to harm you or get close to you or hurt you because you're not going to let yourself get close to anyone. I'm not going to give you a chance to reject me. I'm going to reject you first." It's been my experience that Alcoholics Anonymous has never rejected me. When I first came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of those treasured elders came up to me and said, "Marcel, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it, because the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." And when I came to these rooms, I had no dreams, and I had no hope. I weighed 85 pounds. I couldn't talk, and any dignity that I'd ever had as a woman had been beaten out of me, and I was dying of alcoholism. It took me a year to learn the Serenity Prayer. My brain cells have been on hold for a very long time. This program all started with love and service, and to love is a verb. It's having genuine concern for another human being, but then doing something about it. And I came into these rooms with my very best bad look. I'm the one dressed in three shades of black, sitting in the back of the room with my back against the wall, daring you to talk to you with my less than gracious attitude, and I'm armed. And you welcomed me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you were so very kind to me. I did not come back to my second meeting because of your wealth of knowledge of the big book and the 12 and 12. That would come later. I simply came back to my second meeting because someone was kind to me at my first meeting and who was practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to watch the woman who has become my sponsor, Kathleen, sober a long time, always very kind, talking to newcomers, but she was so alive. But then she'd always try to look in my direction. I would look away because I could not look at you because my perception of what I saw in your eyes of me was very ugly. How you feel about yourself is projected to others, no matter how much you try and camouflage it. I didn't really realize while I was watching Kathleen all this time, Kathleen was really watching me. Now, Kathleen thought I was Native American because in those years my hair was very, very long. I was also very, very dark because I was always getting drunk and strung out and passing out in the sun and an incredible tan. So she'd go home to her husband and she'd say, "Jerry, a little wooden Indian is at the meeting again. What is it behind that girl's eyes that have that look?" And there was incredible pain behind those eyes. I think we're very wounded when we come into the rooms, but God can take us through the wounds. With the help of the steps and a very wise sponsor, I was able to bring up those things that had wounded me so deeply into the light and air so they could heal like any other wound. The emotional wound is just as deep if you've been cut or shot. And wounds heal from the inside out, and my wounds were very, very deep. I had flown back to Chicago for a family reunion. I was at the height of my disease at the time. I did not want to go. My uncle was coming for the last time from the Philippines. He said, "I really want to see you. It's my last trip here." I wrote that celebration. I wrote that lovely celebration. My cousin is a nurse, her husband is a cardiologist, and no one mentions alcoholism. They took me for a physical. The physician did not mention alcoholism. They put me on a plane. I don't remember landing in San Francisco. I don't remember how I got home. My cousin called my son, who was at UCLA at the time, and said, "You've got to get home. There's something terribly wrong with your mother." And he came home, and he found me curled up on the floor like an animal, dying of alcoholism. And once again, he called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not stand. I could not sit up. This is all hearsay, what people have told me. They put me in the back of a station wagon to go up to detox. And they said all the way up there, I was screaming at the top of my lungs, "I do not want to be an alcoholic." Well, I got up there, they said, "You know, you've got to get a sponsor." Now, all these years, I'd go into a lot of meetings, but I suffered from acute postponement, you know. I kept on thinking, you really should get a sponsor, but I'll postpone that. And you really should read the book and do the steps, but I'll postpone that. You really should get a service commitment, but I'll postpone that. So I postponed my sobriety for a very, very long time. So I said, "You've got to get a sponsor." I said, "I want Kathleen." And I said, "She's got a lot of women." I said, "I want Kathleen." So he said, "Why don't you call her?" So they gave me her number, and then she called them to find out what was going on. And she drove up there, and she came in, and she looked at me, and for the first time, I was able to look at a woman eye to eye. And she said, "Are you ready, dear?" And I said, "The eyes are a mirror of the soul." And in my heart, I knew I could trust this woman. And the journey began, one alcoholic woman working with another. And I walked that journey with many women, and they are my gift from God. She said, "Stand up. Be proud to be an alcoholic woman in recovery, and do not use your alcoholism as an excuse for not participating in life, because this is a program of living." And she said, "A lot of women want what I have, but they don't do what I do." And she said, "You are welcome to do what I do." So I went on a lot of 12-step calls. I was sober 2 weeks, but I had 3 service commitments. I've never been without a service commitment since I had 2 weeks of sobriety, ever. She said, "Every time you go to a meeting, thank the speaker. It's nice to thank the speaker. It's not easy to get up and share your life. And if there's a newcomer there, even though you are new yourself, you just go up to them and say, 'My name is Marcel, and I'm glad you're here.'" She said, "Try and smile. You always look like you're on the verge of attacking someone." Because if you don't welcome that newcomer, they may not come back. I understood that. And if someone has a birthday, you wish them a happy birthday. She said, "You focus on those 3 things, and possibly you'll stop thinking about your favorite tragic topic, which, of course, happened to be me." The first time I went to thank the speaker, it was a large speaker meeting. All the way up there, the perspiration was pouring off of me. It was so hard for me to interact with another human being. The first time I welcomed a newcomer, after the meeting, I was walking down the street, and she came running up after me, and she says, "I'm so glad you talked to me, because I'm so frightened," and she started to cry. Now, she thought that I helped her, but she helped me, and that's part of the program. We help one another, and for the very first time in a very long time, I just felt I had done something right, and I wanted to do it again. I didn't go to that meeting that often. I dropped in there one night, and the topic was newcomers. And this woman raised her hand. She said, "I remember the first time I came to this meeting, this woman came up to me and she welcomed me. And I looked at her. And then after the meeting, she came up to me. She said, 'Do you remember me?' I said, 'I remember you.'" Because she had 1 year, and so did I. Kathleen said, "If you're not a half an hour early to your home group to welcome the newcomer, you are late." And she said, "Don't try and look good in AA. You did get sober to be admired. It'll be grand. You did get caught up in your perceived magnificence." You got sober to be a maximum service to another human being. She said, "This is a program of discard. It's not a program of addition. I used to really fantasize that my life would really be embellished by the addition of more and more money, and a bigger portfolio, more clothes, a bigger house, faster car, and a new man who was an amazing way. I found that did not necessarily bring me a quiet heart and peace of mind. It was a discarding of my old ideas, but my old ideas are not discarded without practicing the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the steps. And they are meant to be practiced. On page 15 of my 12 and 12, these steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which if practiced as a way of life, will expel the obsession to drink, enable the sufferer to be happy, and lose be whole. I never felt whole before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you told me these steps are not punishment. These steps have set me free. So I have to continue to practice them. Otherwise, I'm capable of hurting you, stone, cold, sober. My sponsor said, Marcel, your world will change as you change. And that's going to require ongoing commitment on your part. Anything you put before you before recovery, you're going to lose. She says, it's all right. You look at your past, stop staring at it. Kathleen always talks about the delusion of wellness. The delusion of wellness. She said, after 55 years of sobriety, I'm still learning. And I will never be too sober that I can't get drunk. And she said, I don't care how hard you're trying this, Marcel. You're trying very hard. Some things just come with time. And also sometimes they don't come just because you're sober. And many things in my life have not come to fruition without the passage of a great deal of time. When I was sober 20 years, I got together with my former husband, a man I had not seen in 23 years. When I got sober, I tried to make amends to my best of my ability. He's from Germany. As a result of the guidance of my sponsor and the steps, I'm really good friends with his entire family in Europe and in the United States. He has a brother in Germany, a brother in Palm Desert. Whenever there was a loss, I would send him a note. He would acknowledge it. He did not want to see me. And my sponsor telling Marcel, if your heart is in the right place and you're coming from a place of love, the universe has a way of opening its arms and helping you with the healing, if your heart is in the right place. I was going through some old photo albums, and I found some beautiful pictures of he and his mother. He was actually from East Germany. I used to go to East Germany a lot when the Berlin Wall was still up. And I thought he should have these photos of his mother. So I had a beautiful card with orange and yellow flowers. I put the photos in there. I said, I thought you should have these photos. And I said, there were some difficult times on our journey together, but I would like to thank you for gracing my life. And perhaps the time could come we could have coffee and kuchen together. So off goes the letter. 2 weeks later, I go to my bail box, and I open it up, and I see that handwriting. I have that seen in 23 years. Thank you, me, for those photos of his mother. And then he called me and he said, I don't come to the Bay Area that often, but I would like to have lunch with you. He lives up north in a little town called Willits. So he comes to San Francisco. We're in this little Thai restaurant having lunch. And he said, I have to ask you something. He said, were you really angry when we divorced? He got married right after we divorced. I was more than mildly irritated at the time. And I used to go to meetings saying I wanted to execute him repeatedly because once wasn't enough. But instead, I found myself saying, sometimes we have two nice people who grow apart. It was not necessary for me to go into the deliberate manufacture of misery. You will find that line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the family afterwards on page 133. And because of that, we had a really nice afternoon together. But that's because my world has changed as I have changed. This was my son's stepfather. And when we divorced, he sent my son a very cruel letter. It was very, very cruel what he said to him. And so when I told my son we'd had lunch, my son said, Mom, I've heard you talk a lot about forgiveness over the years. This is a family disease. This is family recovery. So my son called him. My son's lived overseas for a long time. Which resulted in my former husband, he started sending him notes and letters and calling him on his birthday. And in November 2010, when my son was visiting, they got together and had lunch after not seeing each other for 26 years. And then I got this beautiful card from him saying, I was so honored and happy that Glenn made the time to come and see me because of such quality time. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, and also thank you, Al-Anon. I've been a great learner of the Al-Anon group for a very, very long time. Now, this is very nice how this all turned out. But if I had never heard from him again after sending those photos of his mother, I would have accepted that because I sent them unconditionally. No agenda, no motive, no expectations. I sent them because it was the right thing to do. I would have accepted that. I used to go to a lot of meetings with Dr. Paul, who wrote Acceptance in the Big Book, and he would always say, Marcel, acceptance does not mean approval. Acceptance does not mean approval. I have a lot of family in Hawaii, and it's always very emotional when I come here because one of my cousins looks exactly like my father. I adored my father. I adored this man. But I'm an alcoholic. He had leukemia. And I used to take him to the hospital for blood transfusions. And I would walk in there, and the nurses would look at me in total disgust. Look at that scum bringing her father like that. And I was scum. And he would hold my hand and say, try not to drink so much, dear. He never judged me. He only loved me. And I broke his heart. Because that's what alcoholic women like me do. Because what I have to remember, no matter how long that I'm sober, when I drink and use, nothing is sacred. Nothing. My husband, my child, my family, my friends. If you're going to survive, you better get out of my life for the time that come, but everyone would leave. And the feeling of being alone and unwanted is the most terrible poverty. I'd gone back to school in recovery. I was terrified. My father's family is very well educated. He'd always wanted me to finish this degree. And I was terrified that you burn out too many brain cells so you're out there to compete in the academic world again. And I found that there was not another student in my class who was an Alcoholics Anonymous. A professor was an Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was in class one night, and the professor had said, pick an object in your house and write a few lines about it and turn your paper over. And then he picked three people in the class to share about their object, and I was one of them. He said, all right, get up and share about your object without your notes. And I had picked my father's favorite chair. And I got up and I said, this is my father's favorite chair. Now, when I was a young girl, my father would sit in that chair, and I would sit on a little hassock in front of him. And my hair was very, very long. And my father would make coconut oil from scratch, like in the old country. And he would put that oil in my hair, and he would brush my hair and brush my hair until my hair was like strands of long black silk, and that chair was filled with love. My father always wanted a son, so when I had my son would sit on the little hassock in front of him, and my father would sit in the chair, and he would whittle these little wooden toys for him. And then my son would climb in his lap, and the dog would climb up, and the cat would climb up, and the chair was filled with love. But after my father got leukemia, he was too weak to sit in the chair. So I would prop him on the couch with pillows, and I would sit in the chair, and I would talk to him, and I would read to him, and the chair was still filled with love. But after he died, I couldn't sit in the chair anymore. So the chair was vacant for a very long time. So one night the cat hopped up there. I decided to bring the chair upstairs by the fireplace, and I would sit in it, and I would read in it. For there were the times that the chair just seemed to embrace me, just like my dad. Now, when I said that in class that night, my voice cracked, so I couldn't talk for long. And I experienced every raw emotion of my father's death that night that I had not experienced when he died because I was drinking and using at the time. So you may never know that many years down the road you will give a chance to experience something very sacred in your life. After I left the class, I was walking down the street, and this young man came running up after me. And he says, "I really want to talk to you, Marcel, because my mother has breast cancer." It turns out that he's an alcoholic, and we're friends to this day. Sobriety does not shield me from life. I got cancer in my 11th month of sobriety. Two people very close to me died of that disease, and I drank through both of their illnesses, and I buried both of them, and I reached out to no one. But sometimes God will give me a really special gift, and I like the way the package is wrapped at the time. I could have gone down either path. You have to waste yourself on booze and drugs, or embrace a very special gift that's been placed in your life. I chose to embrace that, and I was surrounded by the loving arms of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been a runner and a loner all my life. I never had a friend before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. An Irish family in the program, they said, "I live up three flights of stairs, I don't have an elevator." And they said, "You come stay with us, darling." I get over there, I said, "I don't want you to go to any trouble. This is a plate of French toast and bacon is headed in my direction." Every night they were having meals, they were bringing me flowers. My little Japanese friend was bringing me popsicles. And I was just, I had to be physically stopped for me to see that I was not alone. You don't take me easy. A man I loved with all my heart died in early sobriety. And I still miss him because I loved him very much. And so many things were left unsaid. So if there are people in your life who you love and you care about, tell them. Because the years go by very quickly and they're gone. One of the last things he said to me was, "You never said you were sorry," which was a perfect time for me to make things right. And I didn't. And that is one of my regrets. That regrets are a hollow waste of energy. You cannot build on them. They're only good for wallowing in. And the message for me is, Marcel, do not lead a life that leads to more regrets. You got here with your kindness because the language of the heart in these rooms is very real. But the rage did not leave me without the steps. I buried a lot of things while I was out there, but I buried them alive. Unless I incorporate these steps in my life on a daily basis, in my experience, history repeats itself. I'm a volatile alcoholic. When I drink, I have a tendency to hurt people physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And I'm capable of doing that to you stone cold sober if I do not practice these principles. Every one of these steps has a principle. What's a principle? A principle is a basic truth. The principle of step one is honesty. And Marcel being willing to change. I must never forget what I'm like when I drink. I'm mean, and I'm cruel. And nothing is sacred to me, and you have no value to me. That's what I'm like. The principle of step two is hope. Marcel believing that she can change. Belief leads to reliance, and reliance leads to trust, and I trust in the process of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because any level of decency, integrity, and joy in my life, thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. The principle of step three is faith. The faith and trust to move forward with the rest of the steps. Until I did this, I did not change. I had my subtle air of entitlement demanding that you adjust to me. Sometimes you'll hear the term self-esteem comes from doing esteem of relax. The difference between self-esteem and ego is self-esteem doesn't need an audience. Ego always needs an audience. Step four, the courage to take that searching and fearless moral inventory. How could I do anything about my character defects that I didn't know what they were? When I was writing down all these things, these horrible, terrible things, my sponsor said, "Don't forget the good things you did, dear." And I did do good things. You know, every woman in this room, look at this incredible sea of women out there. We all did good things. But the more that alcohol permeated my life, I stopped doing those good things. Also, when I was looking at step four, I got a chance to grieve over the things I had done. I had incredible grief over what I had done. And I had to go through the process of grieving. Part of grieving is anger, isolation, bargaining with God for the healing to occur. Step five, integrity. The integrity to share this with myself, God, and other human beings. I had never had anyone listen to me in my entire life. I did not know how to interact with another human being. I've had the privilege of hearing a lot of fifth steps. It is such a sacred thing when someone will share their innermost secrets with you. Very sacred. Very sacred. I remember when I first started sponsoring women, all of a sudden I've got four sponsees, so I think I've got this great message. My sponsor took care of that very fast. She said, these women are being put in your life for a reason. And it's for you to learn something. So pay attention. My first four sponsees were my son's age. So I learned a lot about my son's pain by listening to them. Concept step six is willingness, but willingness, not action, is fantasy. I just think I'll sit around and be willing today and just fondle those resentments, nurture them, you know, nurture them. Concept step seven is humility. My first glimmer of humility is coming into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and saying, I do not know what to do, and please help me. And nothing has changed. The human beings are God's language. I get up every morning, I say, what do you want me to do today? Eight and nine, the men's steps, the forgiveness steps, and justice, responsibility, and restitution. Had an incredible rage over my alcoholic mother when I came in here. And the very mention of her name could make me tremble. But through the process of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've come to accept myself as an alcoholic woman and to understand and appreciate her torment and to later come to love her at a depth I never thought possible when I was able to separate the individual from the disease. I did not condone her actions. There were some bad things there. But if something takes up too much space in my head, it has power over me. And she had power over me long after she was gone. After I experienced that peace, I remember when I used to go up to my father's grave to pray. My mother was right beside me, just as if she wasn't there. I had to go up to the grave. I went up to the grave. I just knelt. I said, Mama, I'm so sorry. I just wept. I just wept. After I experienced that peace, Kathleen moved down to Palm Desert, where she lives now. And we still interact all the time, but I wanted to be able to sit down and have coffee with someone, you know, locally. So, you know, I'd known Bill and Jan for a long time. I used to ask Bill to speak for me, like Bill was sober a very long time before he died. They had a lot of young people over at the house, so I was over there one day, and, you know, we talk about our sobriety birthdays more than our natal birthdays, and one day Jan said, oh, it's my natal birthday. I said, really, when is it? I said, so she said March the 4th. It's my mother's birthday. So I started hanging out with Jan, and Jan is sober 48 years, with the same birth date as my mother. And I had the relationship with her that I would have liked to have had with my own mother, but it wasn't possible at the time, two alcoholic women together. I look back, I was demanding things from my mother who was absolutely, she was not capable of giving it to me. Just like people demanded things from me, and I was not capable of giving it to them. I learned a lot from Jan in many different ways. You know, I used to just, you know, beat myself to death. Well, I used to beat myself to death, you know, about my son, that the mother I was. And she said, granted, your alcoholism played a big part in your son's life, but you are not powerful enough to have caused his problems, so I suggest you let him get on with his life and tend your own acre. And then with my mother, she said, granted, your mother played a big part, her alcoholism played a big part in your life. But your mother was also that powerful enough to cause all of your problems, so I suggest you get on with your life. I learned a lot about relationships from Jan, because Jan had a very, very loving relationship with her husband, Bill. So when I learned about relationships, get to know people who are in a good one, because it's kind of hard, the blind leading the blind. She asked me what was important to me in a relationship. For me, honesty, trust, respect, someone I can communicate with, and someone I can laugh with. Do we have the same values? Integrity. Now, if this is very important to me, I better work on becoming this person myself. Not here I am, baby, make me happy. I met my partner through service. We've been together for a long time. It's really nice. Bogie, Chrissy's husband, they're out playing together tonight. They've been taking him around the island. We did service for 7 years before our first date, actually. Actually, our first date was after we were doing a meeting at San Quentin. And very romantic. Yeah. And after that, the relationship changed, and we've been through a lot together. We've had a lot of loss together, but we've wonderful times. You know, he has 3 children and 7 grandchildren, and I have my son. And every holiday, Christmas Eve, we get together at Delancey Street. We have this Christmas Eve luncheon. All the children come. His grandchildren come. His former wife always comes. And thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, thank you, Elena. Yeah. This year, his wife came up to me and said, "She said, I so appreciate what you do for my children and for my grandchildren." He has visual problems right now. You know, we do have problems, but you know, we have God, we have the program, we have each other, we've got it all. I just have to use the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Perseverance, step 10, I have to continue to look at myself. Sometimes I'm on, sometimes I'm wrong. Not I'm sorry, I am wrong. It's a big difference. I have to make it right. I remember particularly when I first got sober, Kathleen would say to me, you know, many times 99% of your difficulty is caused by your tone of voice. She said, I want you to listen to yourself talk. Would you like to be addressed that way? She said these very little things, the thing that she didn't. Before I get out of bed in the morning, I lie there and I breathe. And I say, here I am. And I know you're there. Whatever the God of your understanding is. Please guide me today, using your tools, to be the very best person that I can be, but not to be attached to the results. Please reveal to me what needs to be revealed. Please heal for me what needs to be healed. Please guide me today to bring some happiness into someone's life. And when I go to bed at night, were you joyful to be with today? Teresa of Avila talks about treating your insides like a garden. God planted the garden, but that's you to water it. And while the flowers, laughter, caring, loving, giving, sharing, because these are the blooms of life, and stop watering the rocks and the weeds. Fear, anger, resentment, bigotry. Stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, but to practice the principles of all my affairs, which includes family. Family's a big part of this. Sometimes it's really easy, much easier hanging out with our sponsees and people at Prague. We think we're kind of nice and cool for that. But possibly, this is a very powerful family we have. Our relatives, that took more work. With my family, I had to equate sobriety with time. This I must earn. I had to earn my family's love, my family's trust, my family's respect. And many times you will hear the score will never be even in my lifetime. When I first got sober, my son had called me early in the morning about something I was not in total agreement with. In the course of him trying to change my mind on this, he threw out something about my alcoholism. And he caught me totally off guard, and what he said was very cruel. And the reason that it hurt me so deeply at the time, that everything that he had said was the truth. I said, if you still choose to think of me along those lines, that is your choice. As I'm walking to work, I'm thinking, how could he have said that to me? I'm trying so hard, and we do try hard. I called my sponsor. She wasn't home, so I called another lady, and she got together with the team we met, and then she got to my office before I did, and she left a bouquet of flowers with a note. I said, how nice someone cares. And we care. And then I went to a meeting that night. What was the topic? Families and alcoholism. So I always have to remember who I am, what I am, and where I'm going. My name is Marcel. I am an alcoholic, and I'm going to a meeting. Tom Eisman, one of my mentors over the years, because I do a lot of prison meetings. And Tom has a lot of experience in prisons. And many times he says he doesn't like the term speaker. He prefers the term storyteller. Because when we come in the rooms, we don't share our dogmas, we don't share our beliefs, we share our experiences through our storytelling. And over the years, after hearing many, many storytellers share their experiences, I've learned how to be a better mother. I've learned how to be a better partner, a better family member, a better worker among workers, a better human being. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. My son was here for the holidays and a wonderful time. We had a beautiful time. When I was looking for the ornaments for the tree, I thought I was opening up the ornament box, and what it turned out to be, it was a box full of memories. There were some cards that he had sent me in early sobriety. One of them, it was two cats bouncing around on this boat in a turbulent ocean. I'd actually crashed a sailboat on Alcatraz with my son. I don't know if that referred to that. I didn't crash cars. I had a tendency to crash boats. Yeah. And then I opened it up and it said, "We've been through a lot together, Mom. I love you." But there were also two checks in this box, and one of them I'd written him for college, and it was returned insufficient funds. Another check I'd written him for his books. I'd written one number in one place, another number in another place, and of course that was also returned. This is what alcoholic mothers do. And we've been talking about the box of what I'd found, and he called me on my birthday, January the 10th, and the subject of the box came up again. And all of a sudden, this was the longest, we talked for an hour, this was the longest, deepest, most open, loving conversation we have had in 25 years. He says, "You know, Mom, I was so lost in those years. I was so lost, Mom." And all of a sudden, I heard all that desperation and anguish that he'd gone through during my drinking years. I said, "I can't erase any of that pain that I caused you. I try to lead a different life. And I'm so proud of you, and I love you so." He said, "Oh, Mom," he says, "I'm so proud of you, and I love you so." What better present, birthday present, could a mother want? Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've done prison meetings for a very long time. One thing, before I talk about the prisons, this little lady gave me this passage. She gave it to me. I've read this every day since I had 2 weeks. I know I've given this to some of you here. If anyone would like a copy of it, I'll give it to you. "I don't need anyone to make me miserable. I can do an incredible job of this all by myself." And this is exhaustion. Exhaustion is the result when I use my energy on mulling over the past with regret, or in trying to escape a future that has yet to arrive, anxiously hovering over it for fear that it will or won't come true, uses all of my energy and leaves me unable to live today. Yet living today is the only way to have a life. I will have no thoughts of the future actions of others, either expecting them to be better or worse as time goes by, for in such expectations I am trying to create, I will love and let be. All people are always changing. If I try to judge them, I do so only as what I think I know of them, failing to realize as much I do not know. I will give others credit for attempts at progress and for having had many victories which are unknown. I too am always changing, and I can make that change a constructive one if I'm willing. I can change myself and others. I can only love. Have to give them the dignity of having their own journey, which is very difficult for those we love going through things. A member of my family was going through a great deal of difficulty, and one of my mentors said, "Marcel, pray for the stranger. Pray for the stranger that God put in his life to bring him comfort, and you just stay sober and be there. And be there to listen, and that's all I can do. I have to take care of my acre and not your acre." I got into hospital institution work very early, and I was introduced to it. Actually, I was in detox. I was doing my 85-pound stage. I was very, very ill at the time, and a member of the hospital's institution came in to bring a meeting, and Big Norman brought it in, and Norman weighed about 300 pounds on a light day, and And he starts talking about hospitals, institutions, who I know nothing about. But then he starts talking about alcohol and a world of violence. I know a lot about that world. And after the meeting, he came up to me and he says, you know, Marcel, you don't have to return to that world. And he gave me that eye-to-eye look that only the eyes of another alcoholic can give. In the depth of my soul, I knew this man knew my world, and he left. It'd be many years before I realized that he planted the seed of hope and trust that night. I'm at a meeting, I'm sober, and one of those crusty, white-haired old-timers is headed in my direction. He says, you know, kid, I've been watching you for years, kid. You're a real taker. You've always been a taker. You have to learn how to give. They should have business meetings tonight, and you're going to get yourself something called a commitment. I'm going to be at your house at 6:30. I'm going to be on time, and you be ready. He shows up at my house. He's on time. I'm ready. And we go down to H&I business meeting. Who's sitting there? But that 300-pound gangster who'd been in detox at the meeting. And Norman was doing a lot of, organized a lot of the jail and prison meetings. I'm thinking, well, Norman's here, so this gig must be okay. So I got a commitment that night. I've been doing it ever since. I've done about 75 different meetings in Northern California, hospitals, detoxes, psych wards, youth facilities. I've been doing the prison and jail meetings consistently for 24 years. I've been in 4 prisons and 1 jail every month. And it makes my heart sing. I was doing a halfway house for women prisoners. This is in my early sobriety. And they're finishing out the rest of the sentence. The last year, they could have 1 child with them up to the age of 6. I think I had about 4 years at that time when I was doing this. And there was no precedent for this meeting. This was the first time they'd done this in San Francisco. So my partner and I were supposed to be going to the meeting, and my partner calls me. It's 15 minutes before the meeting starts. She's a single mother with a little baby. Her babysitter can't come. It is pouring rain. The heavens had opened up. And she said, what are we going to do? And I said, we'll take the baby, which, like I said, no rain. So we wrap up this baby like a tortilla, you know, and with this big umbrella, the rain's coming down. And this meeting is being held in a little Victorian, and we walk up the stairs, and we knock on the door. The door opens, and this little girl is standing, this young woman, and she's crying and crying. And we see the door open, and all these women are in there with their children. And she said, see, I told you they'd come. They said you wouldn't come because of the storm. But I told them that Alcoholics Anonymous and hospitals institutions always comes. I've been in San Quentin for 24 years, Folsom, Backville, Solano, federal prison for women in Dublin. 2 years ago, I was doing a pre-release program at the federal prison for women in Dublin. I did it every year, I did it for a year, every Monday for a year, for 2.5 hours. And you could bring in outside material for this. And on the first night, I brought in the poem of the butterfly. I've given this to some of you while you've been here. Because for me, I think the butterfly signifies transformation and also beauty. At the end of the year, the women wanted to have a little celebration. And the warden said they could have 1 hour after the last class. So we came in, and these women had gotten colored paper from the chaplain. And when we walked in the classroom, they turned this classroom, the whole ceiling, into a little mini garden, and all these colored butterflies were hanging from the ceiling. Colored butterflies and colored flowers. One lady was very clever at paper cutting, so she made these beautiful white gazebos that looked like lace hanging from the ceiling. And on a board, they made a big rainbow. We made it. Every Monday for a year is a big commitment for these women. And then underneath it, they made a big heart. And the whole heart was comprised of butterflies. And underneath it, they wrote, thank you for the way that you made us feel. Because at the end of the poem, it says, people will forget what you said, and people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And I hope I never forget how Alcoholics Anonymous made me feel when I came here, because I was so broken when I came here. I was physically, emotionally, and spiritually destroyed, But you gave me the gift of hope and the gift of trust and the gift of a softer heart. But I always have to remain grateful because it's harder to bring the news of a grateful heart. I must never let the things that I want make me forget the things that I already have. I must never let the life that AA has given me get in the way of my AA life. I have to remain grateful. It's hard to drink and use with a grateful heart. I used to look at my life as very empty. My sponsor said, why don't you look at your life as being spacious? But to fill it with more healthy things. I said, I came you destroyed, and you made my soul blossom. So why would I ever want to leave you? I want to thank all of you lovely ladies for being here and for the privilege of being able to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous.